This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 708. I am in Montreal right now for the Just for Laughs Festival. It's lovely here. So if you're around, I'm performing at the Olympia Theater on Saturday, July 25th at 8 p.m. Tickets are at funcomfortabletour.com, or you can go to JFL's website, hahaha.com, and come on, see a show, or I'll just see you wandering around the streets of Montreal as I get poutine from somewhere, and then you as a local tell me that I've gone to the wrong place, because I'm a tourist. Désolé, je suis un touriste. I don't know what to say. I'd also like to plug competitive erotic fanfiction, which has been extra hilarious lately with guests like Baron Vaughn, Johnny Pemberton, Guy Branum, Kyle Kinane, and more. Check it out on iTunes and at Nerdist.com, competitive erotic fanfiction. This episode is Leah Thompson, who was so awesome. Oh my god. If you've been in love with her your entire life, which most of us have, just the way that she is as a person will elevate that several levels. She's promoting the 30th anniversary of Back to the Future and her TV show Switched at Birth, which is on ABC Family. The new season begins August 24th at 8 p.m. But so great. We had so much fun. She's just a fun... I'm going to shut up and just let you hear it because I'm gushing. I was nervous to meet her. I was nervous, and she could not have been more warm and friendly. So... it's, you know, when you meet someone who's been a piece of your life, I mean, she didn't know she was a piece of my life, but she's been a piece of so many of our lives and so many different films and played so many great characters. And, it's the part of the job that makes me happy, finding out that people are A-okay. So this is Leah Thompson. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 708 with Leah Thompson.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Control this dog here.
The dog will not move the entire time. Maybe she'll go from there to there. That's about it.
Not like my dogs.
Is your dog spazzy?
I have so many dogs.
How many dogs do you have?
6, 7, I'm not sure. But there's a lot of people that stay at my house or come to my house and have other dogs, so there's usually some other dogs.
So it's sort of a dog hostel.
It's, yeah. Or... but not hostile. It's a dog friendly.
A dog friendly house.
So basically what you're saying is anyone listening could just bring all their dogs over to your house.
Maybe not.
Okay.
Not
all right.
So much
okay.
That,
all right. So we got some clarity on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So not every dog can come to your house.
No, not every dog.
Is Matt coming in?
I don't know. I just texted him.
All right. He was here a second ago. All right. Our other person who's on the show, Matt, maybe in the bathroom. We're not 100% sure. This is no. This is just. This is why I really wanted a tagging system where we just a slight tranquilizer. We just put a tag just in his neck, so he's you know he's fine. No.
Why don't we just take our mics and go in the bathroom and see if he's there? See how things are coming out.
Matt, I brought someone in to say hi to you.
Hey, I'm Mia Thompson from Back to the Future.
I would love to bathroom prank people with you. Oh. If we could just go, Matt, have you met Leah Thompson?
You know what? People aren't beyond that. Like, people slip toilet paper underneath the stall and ask me to sign it.
God! What do you say?
That's classy.
Do you sign it?
Probably. Just because I'm just like, wow, that's some cojones for sure.
That's dedication. Mm-hmm. That's dedication. That's dedication. Well, I'll tell you, it is the one, you know... The one disadvantage that a men's room has is that I get really mad if you have a place that doesn't even have the dividers. The stalls are all just lined up, and then you just kind of stand there. And then sometimes people will be like, "Hey, you're on the," I'm like, "Oh, not now, please." Yeah, it's a very inopportune time to have a conversation with someone.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting that whole etiquette, like talking on the phone, like on your cell phone, like. That's a weird thing when people are all sitting in the stalls talking on their cell phones. Somehow it just seems wrong.
It's a little too much. Yeah. There are some things. Now, listen, I think in a pre-social media internet era, our family, like our parents' generation was very much like, don't talk about anything in public.
Right.
Be very private. I still think there are elements of that we should hold on to a little bit.
Yeah, just for dear life. Just like...
This is Matt.
Hi, hello. Matt. Sorry I'm late.
Were you in the bathroom?
No, I was with the writers helping them with the Trump story.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha.
Oh.
We were concocting this wonderful prank about how Leah and I were going to go into the bathroom and introduce you that way.
Oh.
We thought you were in the bathroom.
I love it.
Yeah. I don't know if you would have at the time. I think you would have been mildly horrified.
Would have been
we started
great.
Out this interview a little dark.
Yeah, well, I don't number two at work, guys. It wouldn't have been that embarrassing.
You shouldn't.
No.
It's a horrible thing to do to your coworker.
Yeah, also, like, you got a home bathroom that's nice and comfy. Use it.
Yeah, okay, good.
You should be able to know when that's happening.
All right, good.
You're on the regular.
Do you guys know this about each other? Is this a whole
now
new...
we do.
Oh, my God, I'm so happy to be here for this intimate moment.
We're breaking down all the personal barriers.
See, just a few minutes with me.
Chris has a robot toilet.
I have a robot toilet.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, you do.
No.
No, I wouldn't believe it. It's like a Japanese robot toilet. It's got all these controls on it.
Wow.
The seat heats up. It lights up when you walk up to it.
Does it cool? I suppose it wouldn't have to cool, right?
No, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You feel like you have a friend.
A
special friend.
I have one.
I'm your friend?
And I do horrible things to it. Just like a real friend. I'm a terrible friend.
At least you're consistent.
At least I'm consistent.
You make us all wash your ass.
This is how I feel like the robot apocalypse will start, is one of these robot toilets is going to be like, you are disrespecting me. And then Skynet. I saw Terminator last night.
So. Oh, how was it?
It's really fun. It's really fun. Really
did they use old footage to make Schwarzenegger look young?
They used a combination of
digital and
of digitally. Yes, there was old. It was definitely old because when you first see him, you're like, holy shit! You forget how different he looked.
Yeah.
In the early 80s,
I saw a little clip of them fighting up at Griffith Park, and I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty rad. But yeah, if you're a fanboy, this is your year of movies. You get a Jurassic Park, you get a Terminator, you get an Avengers, and you get a Star Wars.
I have a great Terminator story.
What's your Terminator story?
Well, they were really interested in me for the first Terminator.
For Sarah Connor?
Yeah. It was and I was kind of like a movie star, although I didn't have a car. I had borrowed my boyfriend's cousin's pacer. And something was wrong with the transmission. So the fluid was leaking out of the, and you had to keep adding transmission fluid to this pacer. And the audition was up on Mulholland and it was raining and their house was like down a hill. It was when they were still together, James Cameron.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Anyway, and so I actually slid down their hill and took out two new trees and some lights as I slid in. But it wasn't really badass because I was in a pacer.
Sure.
So I didn't get the part.
Oh.
I was like,
did you even audition for it?
I did audition, but I was really upset about causing at least $5,000 worth of damage.
Did you have to cop to it?
I did. I mean, like, they saw it. The pacer was like, and then I was like pouring transmission fluid.
That's where all that space camp money went.
I think that would have been pretty badass. I've got the hood up and the transmission fluid.
Space camp was after Terminator.
Right, I know, but
by
I'm assuming they built her.
Space Camp was what, like 86?
I'm not sure. It was right around the same time.
Right,
I'm blacking out.
Yeah, or the first Terminator was early 80s, maybe 80.
Well, I was hot enough to get an audition for it. So Back to the Future probably had been out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. My career would have been different if I wasn't that one.
Well, to be Lorraine McFly and Sarah Connor at the same time. Yeah, and both time-related movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were almost kind of the go-to for mega blockbuster time-themed films.
Yeah, I could have been.
Was the audition, was it weird after you were like, I'm sorry all this happened. Anyway, don't kill me, Terminator.
Yeah. I was thrown. I felt bad.
That would have been Gail Ann Hurd, I imagine. Yeah.
They had a house on Mulholland.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But you know what? She's not in this movie, right?
No.
Amelia Clark from Game of Thrones.
Too old. That would have happened to me. I'm glad that didn't happen to me.
Well, she's also playing Sarah Connor from 1982, right?
She's from 1984.
Oh, so they can fix him looking old, but not her?
They explain it with one line first of all, the guy who plays Kyle Reese, who was Michael Biehn in the original movie, because now, of course, movies are obsessed with, like, guys have to have ripped six-packs.
It's craziness.
And they were not like that. And, like, Michael Biehn was just a regular-looking dude. Good shape, but just, like, not a fucking titan.
Yeah.
And Arnold's Terminator character explains that that the layer of tissue is living tissue, and so that ages. So that's why his body looks older, but inside he's not obsolete.
Oh, that always made sense to me.
Yeah,
of
course.
That was fine.
Yeah,
I was fine with that.
I'm so interested in that. I mean, having been in this business for 33 years.
33 years!
I'm so interested that it's a kind of equal opportunity sexism now, because all the guys, like you're saying, all these guys are ripped. And I do a lot of girl TV, you know, and, you know, the guys, every single guy that gets cast has to be awesome looking, and the girls can be whatever.
I mean, it's
kind of awesome.
It's kind of
I feel bad for guys though. Like, how do you get that ripped? That's a lot of work.
Well,
I feel
your job.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, if you're like 16 years old, it's easier because your metabolism is super high. Like, you're still,
it still requires hours in the gym.
Yeah, of course.
And weird way shakes and stuff.
I think
in general, we probably set what is normal looking people, like, beauty standards way too high. Like, there are so many things I watch, I go, well, thank God everyone's attractive in that world, because otherwise how could I have enjoyed this story based on the writing and acting alone?
Well, I still enjoy House Hunters, and everybody's not a looker on that.
Oh, that's
do you watch any of the do you have any guilty pleasures? When you get home and you've said hello to your dogs, which probably takes about 45 minutes because there's so many of them, when you plop down on the couch, what is your sort of passive watching? Are you a TV watcher at all?
I feel like I don't have that kind of time. I don't know. The only thing I always watch is Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
And my husband and I watch that. That's like the show that we watch.
Did you ever host Saturday Night Live?
No, I never did. Isn't that weird? And I was on NBC for a long time.
You really were for like 5 years, right?
Yeah,
Caroline City was like 5 years.
I guess they didn't think I was funny enough.
Motherfuckers, they're wrong.
And I can do characters.
Yes.
I have lots of characters.
Well,
and
they had
voices
to get through all six of the Friends before they got out of the city.
You know, there's that. I have an unfair, you know, image of being completely white bread. And that's odd because I made love to a duck and tried to have sex
very
with
open
my son.
That's very edgy.
Why do they think
that's
I'm so boring?
That's very edgy. I know. That's all very...
I don't understand it. It's like, no matter what I do... All right, I've been married for 26 years, so what? I think that's edgy.
I mean, before that, some stuff happened.
Before that? Yeah. And, you know, I'm not so dumb and boring. But anyway, yeah, I think that, that's why I didn't get to do Saturday Night Live.
I mean, you really, I'm pretty sure the first time I saw you was probably All the Right Moves, I'm guessing. That was probably the first time. Because I was in the right age range to, like, I was in the right age range to have been in the demographic for all of your movies when you first started out. What was the first thing you did?
My first movie was Jaws 3D.
Oh, Jaws 3D.
People
Fuck,
Zero.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is essentially Jurassic World.
It is. People have said that.
Yeah. It is essentially Jurassic World. The giant dinosaur is Jaws.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've even seen pictures that compare the shots. Yeah. I'm like, really? That movie is... I remember seeing it in Philadelphia with like this... just everybody was trying to get out of the heat,
you know?
And it was playing with some other 3D movie. And the only thing that was scary was like a hypodermic and a frog jumping at you. Otherwise, everyone was just like...
Yeah, but when the shark comes into the... When you're in that aquarium tube...
Oh my gosh, I can't believe you've even seen that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I saw Jaws 3D too.
Jaws 3D is great.
They really tried to play.
Doesn't say a ton, but it's the best of the Jaws sequels.
I mean, of the Jaws
it's the best of the Jaws sequels,
which isn't really saying much. But I did water ski on a 3-tier pyramid of little girls.
Did
shoulders.
You really?
Yes, I did, and I really did it.
Wow,
I was really bad.
So you do your own stunts.
That's right.
You had sex with a duck.
That's
I mean, this
right.
is ridiculous.
I know. I've done so many cool things. Like I shot a bunch of Russians. And...
oh yeah, Red Dawn, the first PG-13 movie.
Wolverine!
Yes!
The most violent movie of its time.
Oh, again,
more,
I was the
more
right...
More kills per square inch.
I was the right age for that, because what young high school student wouldn't want to be the leader of the resistance when the communists come in and try to take over our country?
Take on the Red Menace.
But
it
you know
great.
What? There was a lot of crying. Patrick Swayze cried a lot. And and there's a giant close-up of a big snot bubble coming out of his nose, which pretty much is my favorite thing ever.
That's real.
That was real.
That was real.
He improv that snot bubble.
He did. He, you know what? It took a lot of takes. It usually just broke, but this one went out and back in.
I know I can do it this time. I was doing it at home all morning. I swear to God, I can do this. Yeah. And so with Back to the Future, did they just offer that to you, or was it a long process, or how did they involve you?
I had made this movie called The Wildlife. Cameron Crowe.
Yes,
wrote it.
Yes, I know that movie.
Chris Penn was in it, and Eric Stoltz was in it, and it was at Universal, and it was really pretty lame, but they were looking at Eric Stoltz, and they said, "Who's that girl?" And then I got an audition and a couple auditions, and for some reason, it just really clicked with me. But I did have to do a screen test, and then they negotiated with me for a long time. They tried to find someone cheaper.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they may not make their money back on this movie.
I know. I mean, and anyway, so... And then, at the same time, I was offered Chorus Line to play the girl that couldn't sing. You know, really couldn't sing when I couldn't do a sing. And I can sing. Anyway, cut to. I was offered both the movies at the same time, and I had to pick. Thank God I picked
I think
the right
you
one.
Made the right choice.
Yes.
It feels like, because Tom, let's see, actually a lot of Back to the Future people, Tom Wilson's been on, Kristen Glover's been on, Christopher Lloyd's been on.
Yeah.
Tom told this really insane story about when they recast Eric Stoltz, and they brought him in. And it was this very ominous, like he was just alone in this big studio head office, and they were like, "So this is a thing that's happening," and they basically kind of just made him agree right there that he was okay with it. You know, like it was a really strange. He said it was because he thought he was being called in to get fired.
Right.
Did you get a big call in too?
Well, no, mine was kind of bad because my boyfriend at the time, Dennis Quaid, was in making a movie called Enemy Mine.
Which was an amazing movie.
Yeah, which was, you know, like cast and redone and redirected. Anyway, he was in Germany. And so I wasn't supposed to leave. I had a week off. I wasn't supposed to leave. And I did. So I was in Germany. And back there, you know, back then you would call your phone machine. So I was like, beep. Steven Spielberg's office. Please call back. Beep. Bob Zemeckis is on the line. Beep. And so I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. They found out and they fired me. And then, you know, I found out what really
luckily.
Happened. Well, luckily. And luckily I wasn't in the immediate reshoots. But, yeah, that was bad. That was scary.
Were you friends? By the way, Some Kind of Wonderful, I think, is one of the best movies of the 80s.
Oh, thank
I
you.
I adore that movie so much. It's such thank a sweet, you. Sincere, wonderful movie. And the last scene when the punks break in. Oh, I fucking love that movie so much.
Oh,
did you? Was it? Did you? Do you like? Did you like making all those films at that time? Was it fun, or did it feel like work, or was it?
Oh no, no, no. Well, because I really didn't. I didn't come from that. I was a ballet dancer, and so it went really quickly. I started acting and kind of hit the jackpot really quickly. And so for me, I had lied and said I'd done all these movies, and so I was just like swimming.
No,
oh, let's just check. It doesn't exist yet.
Oh no, I made up movies that then were made later, and they were still in my resume. And they're like, "You're in Crossroads," and I go, yeah, they cut me out. So I had made up all these movies, and so for me, it was just like catching up because I came from Minnesota. I just didn't have anybody to help me. Right. So I was like, what do I do? I always thought I'd make $75 and a week, and I just, so for me, I was just trying to catch up. And I'm still that way. I have to remember, like, oh, wait, I know more than almost anyone in this room. But in my mind, I'm still like, I don't know what's going on.
I don't know if that ever changes.
I know. Everyone should realize that everyone's scared.
Yeah,
everyone thinks everybody else knows everything, and they don't.
They don't.
Nobody
yeah.
knows nothing.
And I don't think there's a point where all of a sudden you go, well, today's the day at 10 a.m. I figured it all out. Like,
yeah,
I don't think
I
there's
know.
Ever any... I don't think there's ever any that moment.
No. It was just like this... treadmill I got on, and I did like movie after movie. When I did Back to the Future, Howard the Duck, Space Camp, they were all 6 months, so I did that whole a year and a half with like a week off.
Wow.
So I was just like trying to get it all done.
And did you feel the weight of everything you were doing? I mean, you must have started to understand like, oh, these are all enormously the biggest movies of the time. And
yeah, I didn't really have any perspective on that, but I did know that Back to the Future was a big deal, but did not think that you and I'd be sitting here talking about it. And
you didn't foresee that?
No.
I don't understand.
We all are confused by it, honestly. Except for it is a really great movie. It was really fun because I hadn't seen it since for a long time, and we were at Wolf Trap and we were watching it with the orchestra, National Orchestra.
I'm going Tuesday night.
At the Hollywood Bowl, and they're going to do it again. And there was it was so epic, and for some reason I could see the movie in a whole different way that I had never seen it before. And it's just a really odd thing to create something that, epic. That's still appreciated.
Not only just appreciated, but because a lot of times, if you go back to watch some of your favorite movies when you were growing up, you're like, I feel like this was better when I, a lot of them don't hold up. That movie completely holds up.
Yeah.
Top to bottom.
It does. It really does. It's just incredibly constructed. And now as a director, I can really appreciate the shots. I mean, the shots are incredible. The way it's put together, the way each shot, I mean, that's what Zemeckis says, that's awesome, each shot is there for a reason, and he trains the audience to be like, this isn't wasted. He trains you right away to watch and not, so many movies the stuff doesn't pay off and you get like whatever, but you always know that there's something to see in every shot that's important, and I love that about the way he directs.
And it's even kind of fun to start, because now there's some Howard the Duck nods,
mm-hmm.
like in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there's a little bit of Howard the Duck nod toward, like, is that going to pay off in some way? Was that before, in a time before CG effects? I mean, it was really just a practical gag, basically.
Yeah.
What was the shooting process like for Howard the Duck?
So hard. It was really hard. My name was Dawn, because they would shoot my close-up at dawn and make sure the duck was done. I was like, I had no idea why. Like, all the puppeteers had to be there, do my close-up first. But it was really painful. It was really painful. I think we all knew. I mean, unfortunately, if you would have just waited 5 more years, I wouldn't have been in it, but it would have been a much better movie if it would have been done like... Roger Rabbit was, think, 100 times better. Because the comedy just sat there because, these puppeteers, oh, gee, no matter what, they try to get rid of us actors, but actors add a lot. And that's what they did in Roger Rabbit. They had the actors right there. Even though it was animated, the actors would do the acting so that the pace and you know there was life to it, but it was very hard to keep the life on Howard the Duck in the comedy, and it was a bizarre concept. I mean, I think that's why people really appreciate it, because it's so crazy.
Yeah,
you know, it's just such a crazy movie, the idea of this duck and his girlfriend and stuff, you know. But the puppet was kind of cute, and that wasn't what the actual Howard the Duck was like. Wah! You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He moved differently. He was like, wah! And they couldn't make a little person in a very uncomfortable suit, that, you know, work that way.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking with it.
No, it's fine.
That's a good opinion.
But I am. I'm really. You know, people are always. You know, we don't want to bring up Howard the Duck, and there's so many cool fans that like it, and so I've always embraced it.
Yeah.
Who says that to you? Like, what a rude thing to say.
People do it all the time. They do it all the time. Like, I'm supposed to be embarrassed about it. And that's not rule number one in my career. I'm like, I did it. I own it. You know?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm not going to be all sorry about it. I'm going to be like, I did it. I cashed the check. I worked hard. I did my job.
Well, the other thing, too, is that, there, you know, as a performer, you're such a small part of the whole process that there's, you know, there's really not that much that anyone could be. I mean, I don't know. It's just has, like, so many things have nothing to do with you. So people making comments about a movie, it's like, but you still did a great job in it, and you still had fun. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess people just like to be controversial.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's fun to kind of hate on stuff. So, I mean, you know, that's all right. It's okay. But I just say that I really love my Howard the Duck fans. They're like my favorite fans ever. So I'm always very happy to meet them and grateful. And, you know, I love iconoclasts. I consider myself an iconoclast and a little weird nerdy girl.
I mean, for sure.
Some people might think of me of another way, but in my heart, I've always been, trying to, like, I always love the underdog. I always have tried to be a little bit different and not, you know, be myself, not try to fit in and whatever. I guess it doesn't look that way, but that's in my heart, and so that's why I love my Howard the Duck.
Is that how you grew? Did you grow up that way, like sort of awkward and just trying to fit in or not figuring out your play? Like, what was your childhood like?
No, but my childhood was really one of, like, I mean, I had this weird group of friends in junior high, and we did all these weird things, like name trees and, you know, say we were never going to get the blue eye disease and weren't going to wear makeup and we were like bare feet. And we were just like, I don't know. I just like people that buck the system, always have.
But you're a ballet dancer though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is intense.
Yeah.
Ballet is intense. So how does that figure in the sort of like, hey, you know, we'll just have fun. And then, like, that is a very strict lifestyle, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I've always worked hard. I always learned. And yeah, well, I was not only a ballet dancer, I was a modern dancer too. So that's like that's a kind of a fringe kind of thing. So I was into like all different styles of dance and theater. And Minneapolis is a very interesting place. It's got a lot of arts. And, so I was always into that. And I was always into working hard. And, you know, that always pays off.
Yeah.
It just always pays off. You just got to start at the bottom and work hard. And you'll make it.
Minneapolis is a phenomenal town, and I do stand up there once a year, and it's just a good comedy town, but it's just a good theater town.
It is.
I assume it's just too cold to do anything else, and so people are forced to go inside and enjoy things that aren't out of doors.
Yeah, I know. It is a really good theater town. It's a really good art town, and it was a really good place to grow up, except for waiting for the bus. 40 below. I still have the broken blood vessels right here from that.
Yeah, it was the last time when we were there, negative? It was hugely freezing. It was like negative 30, and they were still having the nighttime Christmas parade. I'm like, what are you guys doing? It's so
cold. Well, they gotta live.
I know.
You still gotta live.
I know.
Just maybe do it during the day. It was a Saturday. It'd be a little bit warmer. It'd be like negative 18 instead of negative 40.
I know. You gotta admire the folks in Minnesota. They're pretty cool.
Did you ever live there again? Did you ever want to go back there? And
yeah, I mean, I've done a few. I haven't done enough movies there, but I did one movie there and one commercial. And I go back and visit every once in a while.
Yeah.
But I don't have that family in there.
As you're, of the three Back to the Future movies, do you have a favorite?
Back to the Future 1.
Yeah.
But I love Back to the Future 2. I forgot that was like crazy.
Thank you. I love it too. Chris does not.
Really?
I just felt, I like it. I just felt like
is changing.
Huh?
Your tone is changing.
No. I thought it was I felt like it was really had to be really expositional to explain all the stuff that happened in part one. And I also I didn't like a world where you ended up with Biff. I just didn't like a world where you ended up with Biff.
You weren't supposed
to. It was
so
dark.
I know, but it super bummed me out.
It was super dark.
It super bummed me out. I mean,
George is dead.
He's dead. Marty's mom has these big fake boobs. She's married to the worst person in the world at this point. I mean, it's like what teenage guy didn't see his own mom in that and just go, no, what happened?
That's one of my favorite characters, the Lorraine with the big boobs. And
yeah,
the drunk
boozy
and the
Lorraine.
I keep that on my reel because no one will give me that part. I'm like, I did that part 30 years, 25 years ago. I can do it now.
There's usually a third guy on the podcast, and he had to do a press tour for the show that he's on. But he asked if we had done the podcasting, and I said we're about to do it now. And so he texted me, "Say hi to your mom for me." And then I wrote back in all caps, "You made her get those things." So
that's
it's
the greatest line. I love that character, but no one will let me play her.
Maybe there's just I kind of feel like. I think if we're expanding the universe, somewhere at Biff's casino, Lorraine has one room where she does this really sad one-woman show Carpenter's
great?
Covers or whatever, where she's just drunk and spilling out of that dress. I mean, like, there's a side thing going on there somewhere.
Right.
Don't you think she would have to have had something like that
drown
out?
On the top of the world, down on creation.
It's Biff's wife. She's not conscious most of the time.
It's just like to the side.
She's in
me.
A blackout. I can tell.
You just shut up. This is hard work. And I'm just like yelling, and you're throwing bottles at people.
See, you said you didn't like it, but you got a whole thing.
No, I didn't say I didn't like it. Matt said I didn't like it.
Well, that's because you said you didn't like it last week.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I just said
interesting.
Matt. I just said of the three,
It's
the one that had the most. Exposition to backtrack,
and I was into it. I loved it.
I said it was my. I just said story wise, it was my least favorite of the three. I didn't say I didn't like it. I sound like I'm backpedaling.
I think Zemeckis says it's the darkest movie he's ever made.
He's not wrong.
He's
every second of that movie is just
dark.
Like cranking the stakes of darkness, especially when he. Although the only thing is that.
What about Michael
ridiculous.
Fox in drag? That.
Oh, horrifying.
I recently wore that wig that he wore. I saved that wig.
That's amazing.
His head's bigger
you
than
know what?
Mine.
He wasn't a bad-looking lady.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Good bone structure on that Canadian boy.
But then in three, then you guys get to be Irish immigrants, which is really fun.
Yeah. No, that was really fun. There's the worst technical error in the whole thing is in that movie. When I pass this baby, when they pass this baby from one Michael Fox to another, there's like this big line.
Oh.
And they tried so hard. They spent so much time trying to figure out how to do that. Nowadays, it would be like, bing!
You do it on your iPhone.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Nowadays, they'd be like, well, we don't need Crispin. We'll just make them in a computer.
We'll just put people in a computer.
No.
It's so
see
really
what we did with Arnold?
It's so
scary.
But at least Arnold had to be there. At least Arnold did have to be there. They didn't just make him out of thin air.
What was it like interviewing Crispin? Can I interview him?
Yeah, of course you can. He was great. He was very very talkative. Like he had a lot of the way that these work is that I don't really plan what I'm going to talk about with people. I just sort of let them dictate where it's going to go, mm-hmm. where their energy is, what it seems like they want to talk about. And so we just kind of let him go. And he had a ton of stories. He had talked a ton about Back to the Future. He talked a ton about, you know, living in Europe and making these films that he makes and the raising the money for it. And he was intense, but not threatening, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was really nice.
Yeah. He's a genius. He's a genius in Back to the Future 1.
I mean,
his performance is absolutely
But everyone's
stellar.
Amazing in it. I mean, it's like I think one of my favorite things about the movie is not just that it's an entertaining movie, but I love watching a project where everyone is firing on all cylinders. The music is great, and the cinematography is great, and the directing, and the acting, and the writing, and it's just like everything just
it's
a supernova all together, but everyone all at once. And I think Tom Wilson's first podcast with us was incredible. because I didn't really know Tom before, and he's such a wonderful, sensitive guy, and he had such an incredible point of view, which I never. I mean, and it taught me. I mean, I still fall victim to, you see people on a screen, you see them playing characters, and you go, I guess that's who that person is. Mm-hmm. But then when you sit down and talk to him, you go, oh, no, he's an actor. There's like, he's not that guy. He's a sweet, kind of nerdy, sensitive artist guy. You know, it's not who he is. Or for you, maybe saying like, oh, you know, trying to feel, you always kind of felt out of place or whatever. I mean, like, mm-hmm. I would never have thought that about you. I always felt like, oh, yeah, she's in control. She knows what's going on.
Well, maybe now, because I'm so damn old. But they were really, it's interesting because having made so many projects that sometimes just it all comes together at the same time. And then the other thing is that the audience feels that too. Sometimes that doesn't happen. I mean, I've been in movies where I did a movie called The Trouble with the Truth, which is just this little movie that I made just with two people, John Shea and I. And I had the same experience. Like that movie, everything was perfect. And it's just such a beautiful movie for me. But nobody sees. Right. Hardly anybody's seen it. But when they do, they really like it. But it's nice when it all comes together and people really get to see it, so, which is unusual.
Well, it's hard now, especially because there's just so much stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff at all times.
I know. It's overwhelming.
I mean, having anything.
Yeah, it's so hard for Steven Spielberg to produce a summer hit nowadays.
No, we feel bad for him. I feel. But it is hard that because like I'm doing the show Switch to Birth. We're in our fourth season.
ABC Family, right?
ABC Family. And it's that the other thing is kind of interesting is that, you know, they take us on. We go on for 10. We go off. We're alone. We're here. We're way out in the hinterlands of cable. And still people find us. Like, how do they do that? That's also an amazing thing. Like, they still find us and we still there's still so many fans, and it's just such a different landscape now, you know, that people, you know, can find you somewhere, and that doesn't have to be that many people for you to stay on the air.
Yeah, because even when you did Caroline, you were still, that was in the sort of the last throes of the old way that media was done.
Where
it was like, you know, networks ruled, and it was all, you know, cable was still like, meh, you know?
Yeah.
And you could still draw a big audience. You know, you could still get 20 million people.
I know. We got canceled with a 13 share.
You'd get picked up forever now.
That's massive. We were canceled. 13. I'm so sorry.
No.
We only have a 13 share. Yeah, that was the end of all that insanity. Crazy. Yeah. I know, it's a different landscape. But, you know, I know more people are working, which is great.
Yeah. Did you like the sitcom schedule? It's pretty sweet.
It seems like that. But all I remember is complete and utter terror.
Really?
Yeah. It's just so hard when you're
live performing that was bothering.
Well, when you're carrying it and it's the opening of a movie and a play the same week.
Yeah.
And you're learning it so fast. And I had two little children at the time, and I just felt like there was a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be, I mean, I'm not a raised comedian that way, you know, and it's you know, when you don't hit those laughs, when there's that much pressure on you, the writers are all like, you know what I mean? Like, each joke has to be hit, and
that could be their fault too.
Yeah, what you should do is throw the script in their face and go, I can't make a cake out of shit, and then just throw it
there
in their face.
They were looking for that. They because it was the days of Sybil and Oh no. They were like, they wouldn't give me anything because they were afraid I would turn into a nightmare.
Really?
And I was like, dudes, I've been in the business already for 15 years. I'm not going to all of a sudden turn into a nightmare.
How did you not turn into a nightmare? Because a lot of times, when they're young and they start working on big stuff right out of the gate, mm-hmm. you know, like they can get a little difficult, you know? So how were you able to keep it from being like an ego thing and just make it a work thing?
I just can never imagine. I mean, you know, this is what I strive for, but the iconoclast is kind of like, like, no person is better than anyone else. Like, I can't imagine. I don't like to think of people being better. I like to be part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never want to think that I'm so much better than someone who's doing a lesser job, you know, whatever, quote unquote lesser job. So I've always, that's how I find my happy place, is like being part of a group and being part of a team. Mm-hmm. And I love that about my job. And so to become an asshole would be against that. You know what I mean? That you have to think you're better than other people. And I just, I don't want to come from that place. It and makes me very unhappy.
I think one of the reasons, if I may be so bold, is saying like why there are so many dudes who are completely in love with you and have been since we were younger is that, I mean, not only, I mean, let's just take aside the fact that, you know, I mean, just stunning, beautiful, but there's such a sincere sweetness. And maybe for nerdy guys, it almost makes you, it almost made you seem attainable. Like, but she's sweet. She's sweet. Like, it bleeds through. She's, you know, you're not, in, like, you never, in any of the movies, even in Some Kind of Wonderful, where you were kind of supposed to be sort of a bitchy popular girl.
Right.
And, but then you kind of instantly are human, you know, and you're like, oh, I don't, you know, I'm trying to fit in too, you know. I think that was an essential quality that I think makes you so relatable as a performer is that there's a real humanity. It's not just like, oh, you know, I'm just, they cast a really pretty girl and stuff and she's supposed to be a really pretty girl. Like there was a real depth of humanity to all of your roles.
Well, that's a great compliment. Thank
you. It's true. It's totally true. I mean, I mean, I'm sure wherever you go, people are just like, bah, just fawning all over you. Does that?
No, but you know, sometimes and that, whatever, it's nice. It's nice if you can make, I think sometimes when people think that, you know, stars are better or whatever like that. And if you can be like, I'm not, we're the same. We're just doing the same thing. And we're trying to get through the day gracefully and with dignity and, you know, put one foot in front of the other. I think it makes, sometimes I feel good that makes people feel better. Because that whole garbage that's from People Magazine and all that stuff, the whole celebrity culture, it's garbage, you know, and it ends up making people feel bad about themselves. Even people that are famous and beautiful, you know, they look at that and they're like, oh, look, they're so happy, you know. Oh, look, everybody's just, it's a party going on without me, you know. And I think that all kind of makes us feel bad, and it's just not true.
Yeah.
It's crap.
Were the tabloids that rampant in the 80s?
Yeah, not like that. I mean, this whole social media thing is crazy, but and it has its good parts.
Yeah.
But and I think it has its good parts and its bad parts. But yeah, I mean, there's always been that thing where they want to create this distance between people and make you feel not cool, you know, and there's all these other cool people having a great time, you know. And as you live through this world, you realize that most of the people who are making the most money and are the most famous are the most unhappy.
Right.
You know, and you really, that is the truth.
Why do you think that is?
Because it's so much pressure and it's so much like, you know, so many people on your payroll and telling you what you are and who you are and what you should do and making fun of you. And like, it's just too hard to keep grounded and to just, you know. Like, it's just fun to go out and sit outside in your underwear and, like, look at, you know, walk your dog. Like, if you can't do that, it's a drag.
Right.
I don't care if you're on a yacht in, you know, whatever. I mean, of course, there's some good things. It's nice not to worry about money, but you're still worrying about money.
I have a lot of friends, don't I, Johnson?
Yes, sir. You're very popular.
But you know what I mean.
Also, my name isn't Johnson, please.
I know. No, of course. Of course. It's well, I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that, you know, people that we're conditioned to think that the accumulation of things or somehow gives us more significance or whatever. But it's basically that, you know, fame, money, whatever it is, there's particularly attractive to performers. There's some hole. There's a hole that everyone's trying to fill. And so they try to fill it with that and they try to fill it more and more and more and more and more. And then I think when they realize that that doesn't fix them, then there's a crashing depression that occurs. Like, this thing that I thought would fix me, that I worked so hard for, I realized didn't fix me. So who am I? You know, I think that's a real existential crisis.
It is. And, as I get older, I realize that it's all about every single day. And that's where the kindness comes in and not thinking you're better than everybody. Every single day, every single time you're, like, decent to people, it, like, adds up to you feeling better. Every time you're kind of a little crappy to people, it kind of takes something away from you. And that is the truth for every person, I believe. You know, every time you do something decent, and it takes a lot of those little things to make you feel good about yourself. You know what I mean? It takes a million of them, and you have to keep doing them. Yeah. And you know, that sounds Pollyanna, but that's my life experience. And so that's why I try to be as nice. And not, you don't always have to be nice to people, but you have to be decent and honest and, you know, as much as you can.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, yeah. There's those bad days and, you know, I certainly have them. But, you know, I don't know. That's my thing. And I think it makes you a better artist, too. I mean, I've always been afraid of becoming like, you know, super rich and like insulating myself from the world. Because as an artist, how do you continue on the human journey to express that, you know,
right.
If you are not part of it, if you're not like scrubbing the dirt or cleaning up dog poop or, you know what I mean? Just
right.
Staying in grounded and with in the real world. And I've always wanted to be a really good artist. And now I'm, you know, want to really work towards being a director more. And I'm hopefully directing this movie that I think I'm really going to do it. My daughter wrote a movie called The Year of Spectacular Men that we've been working on for 2 years, my daughter Madeline, and she's immensely talented. And she wrote this movie about five horrible boyfriends when she just got out of college, like five horrible boyfriends. And so, but the boyfriends are well represented.
Sure.
Yeah, they have their side of the story as well because she's very smart, so she sees her part in it. And anyway, it's just a beautiful script, and I've been working on it, trying to get the money. And I think we finally got the money, so I think we're going to start shooting in September. So cross your fingers.
That's amazing.
So that'll be that's a real filmmaker when you've developed the story, you've inspired the story, you've worked on it for years, and then you get to direct it. So
how old is your daughter?
She's 24. My other daughter, who's 20, who's an actress as well, is going to be in it, along with her boyfriend, Avan Jogia, who's going to be King Tut.
Oh, wow.
This week.
Oh,
this,
yeah, yeah.
Have you seen the billboards
seen
for the King
billboards.
Tut? He's
yeah.
King Tut.
That's awesome.
So he'll be in it
as
well.
Is it Teenager King Rebel? Something
yes. Like yeah, that's yeah, that's him.
The book.
Yeah, so it's going to be a great young cast, and I'm really excited about that because that's what I've, you know, really is kind of the culmination of all the things that I've done, being a dancer, mm-hmm. being an actress, being a director, you know, working all that together.
That's pretty rad, and it also says something really great about your family that your kids are 20 and 24, and they're like, hey, let's work with our mom on something, and not like, just drop me off, just drop me off a block away from the wall, you know what I mean? Like, that you guys are all working together to make something is very special.
Well, it's very fun.
Well, when they go to set, she's going to have to drop them off a block from the
yeah,
studio.
Yeah, I'm going to have to
she'll drive
it. Not your mom. No, it's going to be... No, I work with them a lot because they're both actresses, so I've been coaching them for a number of years, so hopefully we've gotten out all that stuff. Like, I know that! There will be a little...
Stick at home! No, yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah. There will be a little bit of that, but I do know them as artists, and it's really fun around my house because it's all artists, and it's crazy. It's like, I've got an audition. Can you help me? Let's print out a headshot. I got to learn a song. Oh, no. I have to do my sign language. It's just, it's funny, and it's very creative. I mean, you know what I mean? That's,
yeah.
That's what's cool.
It's like you're living in the apartment from Rent without the AIDS.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That's an interesting way to describe
yes.
it.
Well, that's the only group of creative people I could think of was the people in Rent.
Yes.
And then you had to tag on the last part.
I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, that may not.
I might not make the next interview.
Guys,
that
may not.
It's like Rent without AIDS.
They're
yeah,
not
it's like.
All.
Okay, so we won't put that on the poster, but we'll just, you know.
I don't know. If someone came with a fucking thing.
No,
said,
Mads.
It's like Rent without
no,
AIDS.
No,
I would
no,
be
they wouldn't.
That's true.
I
should just hit it
there.
Straight on.
How would you not see that?
I don't.
I'd be like, well, that's an interesting advertisement. You've got my money.
I'm glad I'm the odd man out here. It's really fantastic.
If it's anything like Back to the Future 2, I'm in.
Well, Maddie was just directing. She's a musician as well. Mm-hmm. She has a band called Bleach, which is really cool. They have stuff on YouTube. Bleach, Bleitch. Anyway, she's got this cool band, and she was just directing their video, and I was just like the grip. It was so fun. I wasn't doing anything but moving things around and gripping. I didn't say one thing about the directing or anything, and it turned out really cool. So that was another kind of
wow.
Weird thing happening at your house.
Did everybody else in the band go say hi to your mom for me?
Yeah.
So as a parent, if you know, you seem wise, you seem to understand the world, you seem to be very grounded. How do you deal with your kids when you know that they're making, if you see them making decisions that you know are not great decisions, how do you not interfere, or can you, or how do you do? Do you just let them make their own mistakes and learn? How do you keep that balance?
That's a really good question. I'm still wrestling with that. It's an everyday kind of thing. Because, I really think that one of the interesting things about being a – one of the most difficult things about being a parent is letting them go.
Mm-hmm.
Like letting them go to make their own mistakes and learn their own things. And it's really essential because – at all ages, because, you know, that's how you create a person that can take care of themselves, you know, is by giving them a little bit of freedom when it's appropriate, of course.
Right.
But, I have a hard time with that. But you know what? Having been in this business so long, I've made things that I thought were mistakes and then found, you know, you just have to have that feeling in life that, you know, mistakes end up being good in the end. Or they teach you something, or you don't know why you're where you are, or what you're learning from it. So you have to let go of it because it's really hard in your own career, and then especially with theirs. So I try to just be as open as possible and try to just give advice only when I'm asked, because that's important.
That's hard too.
It's really hard,
especially when you're like, okay, just don't.
Yeah. Okay. One of the hard things is I don't really love horror movies.
Yep.
I've never did them intentionally. Some of them just ended up that way for unusual reasons. But I don't really like horror movies, and you know they're really I don't like when my kids get off, you know, are going to do a horror movie. I'm always like,
I love horror movies.
I know people do. I'm just not one of them.
Yeah,
I know. That's why I keep my mouth shut.
I don't love them either. I really don't. Yeah. I don't like. I don't know.
And my husband's doing a lot. He did True Blood. He did The Strain.
Yeah, The Strain, the second season of Strain is about to come out.
Yeah, he did some of those. He's doing a new show for Cinemax called The Outcast.
Oh, yeah, that's Robert Kirkman's show.
Yeah, the guy who did Walking Dead.
Who does Walking Dead, yeah.
Yeah, so my husband's the director, producer of that, you know, so he's from some kind of wonderful and Pretty in Pink, he's become this horror guy. he did American Horror too.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah, that's right, he did Some Kind of Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So you met him, was that the first time you met him?
Yeah.
And then did you go, well, I'm gonna marry this guy, or it just took a while to
after we wrapped, it kind of happened. I knew he had a crush on me, but
sure,
I was kind
of
engaged to Dennis Quaid at the time, so.
Right, but Dennis was in Germany.
Yeah, Dennis later.
Never
earlier.
Left Germany.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly worked. So we've been together a long, long time.
That's amazing.
26 years.
And it. Wow. And what is there, I guess you couldn't really distill this into one or two sentences, but what do you think is a key to keep a marriage fresh and to keep a marriage? Like, how do you, in a business where that is, people do not stay together for 26 years, you know, like, how do you do it?
Just don't get divorced. That's really my only advice. Just don't get divorced. But I am surprised. I'm as surprised as anyone that we're still married. I mean, honestly, I think you just take it day by day. And like, for me, I when the times were really bad, I just thought, I think this will pass.
Mm.
And then I remember one time really, when it was a really bad time, and I was like, let's get divorced. And he was like, no, no, no. I love you. We have too much good stuff. And we just like passed through it. You know what I mean? I was like, and that was like a beautiful moment. It was very simple and a very big revelation to me.
Yeah.
Like he just sat there and fought for me in the most quiet and strong way. Just like.
Well, I think I think people now are so accustomed to reacting to every emotion that they feel as though that's the way it's always going to be, or that they have to, like,
right.
I got to satisfy this thing in this moment.
Right, right.
Because this is how, you know, without being patient and without, you know, and I think our society conditions people to do that because of, like, social media, where you can become, where you get instant gratification. Like, I'm feeling this emotion, and people are like, yeah, 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 or no. You know, but feeling like in any moment, oh, I feel this thing, so I should go do that thing. And I think there's something... I think it's wise to not follow every impulse that you feel.
Things change. People, you know, it's just like kids. Like when you first have a baby, you think they're going to just scream forever. Or, you know, you don't realize that they're going to change and the problems are going to change. And if you just like hold on, things will change. And, you know, that's just a little bit of wisdom that, you know, of course, I love my husband and he makes me laugh and he's funny and he's, you know, he always comes through in the end, like if something, you know what I mean? Mm. Like he always comes through with the right thing to say in the end. And also, you know, my kids turned to me like last year when one of them was 23 and she said with like little tears in her eyes, she was like, thank you for staying married. Thank you. I know that it's not the easiest thing in the world, but it was. Thank you. And that was a beautiful thing, you know, at that age for her to say to me. And if it was miserable, like when my parents got divorced, when my mom told me she was going to divorce my dad when I was 8, I was like, oh, thank God.
I was kind of the same way. I was 11.
Like, yeah, I was like, thank God. You know, I mean, sometimes it's time.
Well, yeah, especially because, you know, kids are so they're just like a little emotional receivers, like they know, even when parents think they're hiding stuff, like the kids know, because
they know everything.
Kids, I think, biologically have to be very aware of their environment to survive, and so they need to know. And so I it was the same thing for me. I was like, oh yeah, my parents did not get along at all, so right. I don't. Yeah, it was not.
Yeah, if it's not working out, it's time to go for sure. I mean, I never got to that point, but yeah. It's just pure luck or, you know, genetic luck.
But I think our parents' generation also was a generation where they would, I think the equivalent now is when you say to someone like, oh, so let's be boyfriend, girlfriend. And I think our parents' generation, their version of, so let's get married. Like it was not, I think my dad said, oh, you would, you know, you didn't really date. You met someone and then if you liked them, you got married because it was kind of weird to... You couldn't really live with people because that was sort of frowned upon by society. Right. And so you just got married and then you've figured out whether or not, you know.
Well, you know, it's incomprehensible, the idea that you're going to like get along with someone for that long. Like really, like it seems impossible. I feel really lucky that I still.
My parents have been married for 45 years.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. At a certain point, and I'm getting close to it, it's like, wow, why change? You know, I know his shoe size. I've memorized his phone number.
That is a feat nowadays.
It is a feat.
Because everything's just on speed.
I'm like, come on.
Me though,
I know what I'm getting. Now I'm like, whatever. But
also, the idea of dating is really awful. And it's not... it's not an enjoyable process, and it's usually does not work out, and it's just a bummer. Like dating is just really a bummer. Like people who are serial daters who just like, you know, out with a different person every night, or they're trying to figure. Like, I don't understand that at all. That is very foreign to me.
Yeah, I think I'm too sensitive for that. I don't know. That's a yeah. Well, my daughters are young, so they have to kind of deal with all that. And I'm like, oh, I'm so glad that's not me.
Well, especially now, because there's so much... I mean, because I remember when there wasn't social media, texting, and other stuff, so you literally just had to call people and talk to them. And now when I was dating, I would call someone, and then they would text back. I'm like, oh, that's weird. Does that mean they don't...
No, it just means that that's not how people communicate anymore.
It's so weird when my kids say I talk to that person, and I'm like, and then I find out they were just texting, that's not talking to someone, honey.
That's
it is a different world. It's also so vexing how much you can find out about a person, how you can cyberstalk someone and find so many things out about them if you're good at it. Yeah, I mean, you just didn't through their. You know, Twitter, and you can see so much and you can tell so much.
Yeah.
Like, I think I'm the last, like, generation of person that would still talk on the phone, like, to the point, because I'm 31, I'll be 32 this year. And we got cell phones. I got a cell phone my junior year in high school. And so before that, we were still just, everyone would pick up the phone and call your friend. You call your friend's house, go, hey, is Jimmy there? And then you hang on, Jimmy! You know, you'd have to sit through that.
I'm in the bathroom, man!
And then I've noticed, like, you know, it's all my, a lot of my friends are older. You know, they're in their 40s, most of my friends, which is bizarre. But we're all people that will pick up the phone and call. Well, text, sure. But a lot of times we're just going to pick up the phone, and it's
I find,
like,
texting to be convenient when you can't talk. But I wouldn't replace it for, you know, being able to talk to someone that I wanted to talk to.
20-year-old cousin staying with me last week, and the way she fucking communicates to everyone is Snapchat.
Oh, what?
Like, that's how these kids communicate, and like she's showing me all these Snapchat messages. I'm like, oh, so you really are just, like, saying how you doing on a Snapchat? And she's like, yeah, that's how we talk. And, like, when she would text me, it would be a shit ton more emoticons than I was ever prepared to deal with. I was like, what does this cat mean? it's strange. But that's what 20-year-olds are doing right now, is Snapchat.
Yeah.
I'm not doing
that.
So
weird.
I can't learn another thing.
No, don't.
Are you not on social media at all?
Oh, no. I have to. No. I enjoy it. I enjoy my Instagram, Leah K. Thompson, and I enjoy tweeting, and I mean, we have to. On ABC Family, we have to live, which is really annoying when you direct a show and you have to live tweet during it. You're like, watch the show. I don't want you to be tweeting while you're doing this.
Yeah,
I mean, that, and then I did Dancing with the Stars, and that was really important. I lost a big challenge because I didn't have enough Twitter followers, you know, so it's a whole thing.
That's so irritating.
Yeah.
As a dancer.
But I do enjoy, I do enjoy actually, sometimes I can talk to people I haven't seen in a long time, like famous people I haven't seen. I can do that on Twitter sometimes, and I enjoy interacting with fans, because when I first started, we weren't supposed to. It was a different world. You weren't supposed to stay as far away as you could from fans, and which always felt uncomfortable to me because of my thing. Like,
right.
I'm not better than you, you know?
Right.
I'm not any better than you. And so I do enjoy it. So I spend a little time on my Twitter.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
My Instagram and my Facebook and all that stuff. But it takes a lot of time. It really does.
What's your favorite thing that you've ever worked on? Do you have a favorite thing?
Ever?
Yeah.
I think...
Season 3, episode 1, Caroline in the City.
Yeah. No. I did... Sally Bowles in Cabaret on Broadway.
Yeah.
This incredible production with that Rob Marshall and Sam Mendes did.
Oh,
I did
wow.
it like maybe 15 years ago, 15, 20 years, 15, 18 yeah. years ago. And that was, I did that for 8 months, and that was really amazing. It was a great part, and it just hit my singing perfectly.
Yeah.
And I'm not really a singer, and I'd never done a musical before. So that's a pretty great way to start. On a great musical with Michael Hall was my MC.
Oh, wow.
And he left to go do 6 Feet Under from that. So that, I really fell in with a bad crowd, and it was a great midlife crisis to have. Got a tattoo, got a belly button pierced, jumped out of planes, sang with, you know, a cigarette in my mouth. And
what was your tattoo? What did you get a tattoo
of? I got a moon and stars right here.
Nice.
Yeah. Not quite a tramp stamp. I gotta stop. But it was just like an incredible production, and incredible.
Yeah.
8 months, 8 shows a year, a week. It was really
Sam
hard.
Mendes, wow.
As it was happening, did you recognize it as like, okay, I need to, are you good at enjoying stuff as it's happening, or do you enjoy it retroactively? I mean, are you focused on the work while it's happening, afterwards go, oh yeah, that was really great, or can you enjoy it while it's happening?
Usually that happens, but as my life dwindles out, you know, I'm starting to enjoy things a little bit more as they're happening. I definitely, because that was such a long experience, so many times to sing Maybe This Time, you know, I don't even know how many times I sang all the songs. I definitely got into enjoying it. Just enjoying, and that's one thing that's great about being on stage, you do stand-up, is like that feeling of, you know, the circle of energy going from the audience back to you and back to you. And, you know, starting on the stage, it was just really profound. And I don't get enough opportunities to do that, honestly. Sometimes I sing a lot for charities, and that's always terrifying, but because it's one song, one time,
yeah.
You know, with a band you don't know. So, you know, you're always just trying to remember the lyrics. But this experience was really Yeah, I did enjoy it.
Are you going to pursue directing more full time now? I mean, have you made a conscious decision like, no, if I get offered anything acting wise, I'd rather just direct, or do you still want
to? You know, this time, day and age, we all have to diversify. You're probably all doing four jobs at the same time to hope that things, whichever works. So I really love directing, and I love one of the things I love, when I direct Switched at Birth, my TV show on ABC Family, I really love it because it keeps you from getting bitter. Like, it's like I could look at the two stars of the show and they're young and they're 20 and like I'm playing the fourth banana mom, you know, whatever. And I could get really bitter. But when you direct, you can't get bitter. You got skin in the game. You get to really appreciate other actors in a way that you can't as another actor. Like when I'm done with a take, I can be like, oh my God, I love you. You're so great. But I can't do that as an actor. It's weird.
Right.
But I love that I can use everything I have and also kind of give back in a way, like give what I've learned in a non-annoying way.
Yeah.
You know, if I go up to a young actor and I go, you know, when I did Back to the Future, I used to use this technique. They'd be like, shut the fuck up. If you're a director, you can give back in a way, you know, and it's, I don't know. I just feel like I spent so many hours behind the camera now. I mean, I've, you know, people go like, oh, you gave up your acting career to raise your kids. No. Look at my IMDb. I have been working nonstop. It's just not giant things.
Who says that?
People say that all the time.
Who says that?
All the time. And
fuck those people.
Don't you have IMDb?
Yes, seriously. It's the internet age.
So, but I've been
working. You weren't in Crossroads?
Yes, exactly.
Ralph Macchio was in Crossroads.
Exactly.
I remember it.
Yeah. God, you're smart.
We all do. Steve Vai, come on.
Steve Vai, yeah. He's got to play the devil. It was basically Karate Kid with a guitar, where it was a guy basically comes up against a foe that he never should have beaten.
But it was
skill.
The skills he had ignored at the beginning of the movie that got him through the end of the movie.
No, I know.
Classical play.
The other movie I made up was The River. Do you remember The River?
Oh, that was
Mystic River.
No. Was the river?
It was really a long time ago. It was like 1983, I think, or something like that.
I don't think I remember The River.
Yeah, I don't.
Was
either.
That was The River? Was it one of those movies where it's like family camping trip goes awry? Kind of a movie.
I don't even know, but that was. I thought you might know since you're a genius.
Yeah.
But yeah, one. Those are the two.
We were busy watching Crossroads. Just wanted a retelling of the Robert Johnson Blues startup.
Is it when you think of directing, what do you think the most important job you have as a director? When you envision directing, what is it that you see as your main responsibility?
About telling a story. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way as an actor. I mean, it's all about being part of a story and telling it as clearly and with as good of a point of view as possible so the audience understands what story you're trying to tell.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, like that's what I was saying about Bob Zemeckis. He tells a story with the camera like so beautifully. And I feel that way as an actor, you know, and a lot of actors don't get that. When I'm coaching people, I'm like, you're telling a story. How do you tell a story in the best way possible, the most interesting way possible? It's not just me. Do I look pretty? You know what I mean? How do I say that line?
Yeah.
It's how do I, and that takes the onus off of it when you're acting to just feel like you're part of the story. It's the same thing when you're singing. It's not like, how do I sound? Am I perfect? Is everybody going to love me? It's no, I'm trying to tell a story. I'm trying to give somebody something. I'm trying to honor the music in the best way possible. And then it takes the pressure off of you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you don't have to be perfect. You're just trying to, you know, tell the story.
Who, just as we're wrapping this up, who was Lorraine to you? Who was Lorraine Baines McFly to you? Like, what type of a person do you think she was? Just because I feel like we saw a lot of iterations of her.
Yeah.
And they were all, it was all, nurture versus nature, you know, like she was a product of several different environments, but who do you think she was?
Well, when you say that, I think of the young Lorraine for some reason, because I think she's like the basis, like the
right,
the original stock,
right,
you know, because she never changed,
right,
she was always the same. I you know, I did a ton of research, and I was just trying to play that person from the 50s that was completely confused, you know, the kind of really repressed sexuality of those women, because it was really a difficult time when you came out of the 40s and they were like, you know, in the 40s, they were like, go work. And then they were trying to get you back in the house with get a blender and wear a pretty dress and
right.
give the guys their jobs back. And so I think it made women a little crazy at that point, you know, like, and bye. So I think that's who she was. She was just someone who was confused and couldn't quite, you know, she was definitely horny.
And there was some repression there.
Yeah, but I would sing Mr. Sandman before every take to try to get into that character, because I was not her. Guess what? I was not Lorraine.
What?
I was somebody else. So I would sing Mr. Sandman to get in that kind of crazy, like, you know, over-hormoned, kind of over... propagandized mm-hmm. kind of thing that she was into, you know. So that's how I found the character. But that was how I had to surface the story, you know. She had to go through this interesting journey where she was like super attracted to guy, and one moment when she kissed him, she realized she didn't like him.
Yeah.
Which does happen to people, actually. I think more than you know, but...
Except it usually doesn't turn out that it's their son.
No.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. No.
Also, maybe don't hire the guy who tries to assault you in high school to be your mechanic. Maybe that guy should be in jail.
Maybe. No, he really wasn't.
No, it's fine. Let him wax the BMW.
No! it's so. Oh, that Biff, what a character. That time he tried to assault your mom in a car. It's a long story.
Also, I like that in the second timeline in the 1985 that Marty returns to, for some reason, Biff doesn't work at that job that he was working at before with George. So whatever happened in Biff's life after Calvin Klein came through caused him to just be a guy that works on cars instead of being a guy that worked at that office.
Yeah, I don't know.
There are whole blogs about this that we could get into. And Crispin Glover was really upset about that scene. He did not like that scene. So the way we prepared for that scene mm-hmm. was I went to his all black lacquer apartment and we painted a picture of a volcano. Together.
Did it help?
I guess. I mean, yeah, it helped us come up with those characters. I have no idea.
So now, which scene? Is that the scene? Are you talking about the scene?
The scene when we come back at the end.
At the end where everyone's happy. And
he taps my butt. Yeah. And he's
well, the volcano is on the cover of the book, right? Doesn't the cover of the book? Oh, no, no, no.
No, you're thinking of Dianetics.
I'm thinking of that, yeah. Oh, God. Why would George McFly start Dianetics? Maybe he did.
You never know.
Oh, he was a science fiction writer. Oh, you guys, we cracked it. We totally cracked it. No, you're right. It's the two couples kneeling in front, and it's got the
Darth Vader, the planet Vulcan.
Yeah. That's amazing. The fuck was I thinking? There's a cut scene that I just saw online of in the second movie, because after Biff comes back after changing the past, he shouldn't have returned.
Right, he disappears.
There's a cut scene where he disappears, but he took it out of the movie.
Yeah. Wow.
You know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You're a nerd.
Shut up. whatever. That's exactly what I thought you would say to me. All the times, like my whole young life, and I'm like, I'm going to meet Leah Thompson today. She's going to go, you're a nerd. Like, yes, it's true.
But nerd is hip. It's nerd chic, isn't it?
Well, now it is, but it wasn't.
Isn't it? I know. I love that
nerd. It
wasn't
really in those days.
I know.
It was a little bit of a. It was a little bit of a prison collar for a while.
Yeah, but we got inspired to write our science fiction novels. And
yeah, we got inspired by that movie.
Yeah.
That inspired George. The McFlys inspired a generation of nerdy young creative people.
I know. Isn't that great? I had a lot of those movies. I've had a lot of people come up to me and say they became nuclear physicists because of Space Camp.
Oh.
Really, honestly.
Did you have to do the vomit comet thing?
No.
Oh, you didn't have to do that?
We completely faked all that.
We didn't have any budget. It's not Apollo 13 over there.
Oh, no. They didn't figure out how to shoot that movie, so the first day we were 10 days behind.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wow.
They were like, we're going to be weightless. No one bothered to figure out how.
Oh, we'll just bet. Oh, shit. That's hard. Yeah, because we have gravity.
Like, wait a second. So we basically just pantomimed the whole thing.
Oh, really?
Arms burn at 7 o'clock.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's
someone at the studio was like, "Well, we'll just get one of those anti-gravity rooms."
Yeah,
you know,
no one knew.
Exist.
No one knew. We'll put them in a blue screen, but oh wait, they're in blue costumes. Thank God they just invented green screen. That really happened. I'm not telling. You know, it put a studio out of business. ABC Circle Films. So,
all right. So before we let you go, is there any, now that I feel like we have you, this is such a unique opportunity. Could you have any weird story from anything that you've worked on that you've never told before that you think people want to hear? If you don't, that's fine.
I have so many, but they're so politically incorrect. I have so many stories.
Okay.
And I'm just, I can only tell them at dinner parties.
Okay.
Because I might get in really bad trouble.
Okay.
There's really a lot of them. Sorry.
Yeah, no, hey, that's fine. Do you know what this means?
That we're done?
No, well, it means that you're going to get invited over for a dinner party.
There you go.
And then we can just talk about it.
Oh my God, I have so many good stories.
I'm not hitting on you. I have a girlfriend, but
no, it's really sad. It's really sad because, like, whenever I do like a talk show, they're like, tell us a funny story. And I'm like, I can't tell that one. I can't tell that one. I can't tell that one.
That's okay. You can come over for dinner sometime and then tell all the stories that the rest of the world does not have to hear.
And then you'll get on here and you'll say,
"Can you believe what Leah Thompson said? Can you believe what Leah Thompson said? And then she shot this guy, and then she kicked a baby. Like, it was crazy. Her stories are fucking crazy.
She's the Night Stalker, guys. She's the fucking Night Stalker. That's what you didn't want to tell us.
She's a serial killer the whole time. They never saw because they never would have expected her. She's the last person in the world.
Why would she think that was okay to tell at a dinner party? There's no statute of limitation of murder.
She drew on a map where the bodies were buried. This is crazy. It was crazy. Anyway, she's not going to get convicted.
I'm so busted.
There's no evidence.
So busted. I'm always telling people that. Put me in those horror movies.
An absolute joy to have you here. Thank you so much. We are honored to have you here. And Switch to Birth, people can watch. Mm-hmm. And by the time this comes out, I think the Hollywood Bowl, Back to the Future,
will have been done. Yeah, because it's tomorrow night.
Yeah, Switch to Birth comes on soon in August 16th.
It is the crazy 30th anniversary of Back to the Future, which even at that time, just hearing like 2015 is so far away.
I heard a rumor, and I don't know if it's true, but I forget where I heard it. I was talking to somebody that might have worked at Universal or something, but they were talking about doing a big anniversary screening on October 26th, which is the date that Marty goes back in time,
right,
at the back lot. And they were going to redress the back lot to look like Hill Valley.
That might be true. I think they've booked me for something like that.
Whatever I need to do, you need me to bury some bodies for you, I have to go to that.
Okay.
I have to go to
that. You have my email.
All right. We're going to do it. We're going to fucking do it.
Yeah. Well, we might.
If that happens, it's like, that's going to be the greatest thing ever.
We'll find out.
Because I was so excited walking around that back lot in the pitch black.
Well, Legendary works with Universal.
Well, I'll figure it out.
I'll make a call and find out, Matthew. And maybe, if it's happening, yeah, we went to the back lot. Actually, last year we went during Universal Horror Nights, and we had a private tour guide, and he took us. Matt was like,
"Hey,
can we see the Hill Valley set?" And he was like, "Sure." So we just broke away and went. And of course, most of it's, you know, it was like, so here's where the show Medium built a fucking facade in front of.
That was the ghost.
Oh, the ghost whisperer. Yeah, the Ghost Whisperer, like, built facades over most of it. So it was like, well, this is a sort of...
Hey, still, it was great. It was great to be there. And it was, since I was, like, 8 years old, I was like, I got to get over there and see that. When I found out that set was real, I was like, oh, it's a real backlot.
And they did it three times. They redid it three times.
They put water in there once.
If Matt ever becomes a billionaire, he's going to build an estate that's the courthouse and the town complete...
Yeah, probably. And if I don't have enough money, I'll just build it from three. Well, it's under construction, guys. That's
in an old west town. Thank you so much
for being here,
Leah Thompson.
Thank you.
And enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, the competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.